Hello. You are listening to Double Space on CITR 101.9 FM, and we are broadcasting from the unceded Coast Salish territory of the Musqueam people. Today, Kat and I will be talking about Yayo Kusama with some recordings from a brief excursion to the Seattle Art Museum, conceptual art, and how we can interact with art in unique spaces.
Yeah, and how art colors the way we view spaces and the way we think about our spaces in general.
Yeah.
And about us going to a new space. Woo!
Woo!
So stay tuned on Double Space.
Hey, hey, this is Lady Gaga, and you're listening to CITR FM 101.9. Look out, Vancouver.
Yeah. Hey, Veruca. What the? For the lady.
Jet black, with my girls with the purple hair, whip it everywhere, whip it everywhere, with my girls with the red hair, with my girls with the orange hair, with my girls with the green hair, whip it everywhere, whip it everywhere. This is for the shorties that ain't got no wedding ring. We just make up for the bling, rockin' iced out belly rings. And for the wifeys who do, shout out to you, boo. You made the right choice and happiness looks good on you. To my shorties in the gym, keeping trim, showing off the melanin. Give it up for them BB dubs, looking luscious and feminine. Pixie cuz, playing double duds. To the shorties in the chucks, rocking Afro pugs. Baddies with the bundles and the 26-inch weave. With Supreme Metro card or dangling keys to the V's. And my nails so long, asking how I operate. Should probably book me now before my price is inflated. Pretty brown on the license plate. Day Chan on the nameplate. If I'm in Japan, I could stand in to translate. Married to the money, we ain't never gonna separate. With my girls with the blonde hair. With my girls with the jet black. With my girls with the purple hair. Whip it everywhere. Whip it everywhere. Chair. With my girls with the green hair. Whip it everywhere. Whip it everywhere. If you a chicken head, be quiet. If you a chicken head, be quiet. Me and my bitches, we about to start a riot. And we don't give a fuck about no diet. To my girls in every shade, getting paid, getting good praise. Stay prayed up, perfume stay sprayed up. My melanin makes your heart go ping. It's a pretty brown thing, it's just a pretty brown thing. If you don't need no validation, wave them hands in the air, no hesitation. My melanin makes your heart go ping. I'm a pretty brown thing, it's just a pretty brown thing. Pretty brown on the license plate. Day Chan on the nameplate. If I'm in Japan, I could stand in to translate. Married to the money, we ain't never gonna separate. With my girls with the blonde hair. With my girls with the jet black. With my girls with the purple hair. Whip it everywhere. Whip it everywhere. With my girls with the red hair. With my girls with the orange hair. With my girls with the green hair. Whip it everywhere. Whip it everywhere.
That was Day Burger with her song, Where My Girls. Yeah, she's great. She's from New York. We love her.
I'm a new fan.
Yeah. Now, onto the Kusama.
Yes, so I figured I should give a brief rundown as to who Yayo Kusama is. The short of it is Yayo Kusama is a Japanese painter, sculptor, and novelist. She was born in 1929, and her career has spanned over 65 years, and at 88, she's still killing it, still making art today in her studio in Tokyo. So she's probably best known for her Infinity Rooms and Dots Obsession installation, both of which are incredibly immersive bodies of art. To give you an image of the Infinity Rooms, they are small square rooms that once the observer steps inside is witness to a room with mirrors on all four walls and the ceiling, with meticulously placed lights, plushed figures, or inflatable polka dot balls, creating an image of an infinite landscape of whatever is placed inside. So when Kat and I were in Seattle, we got to be, I guess we got to observe these Infinity Rooms.
Yeah, we did.
And observe we did. I guess we should maybe just go through a brief rundown of like the whole experience, like just the whole time that we were there.
The whole time?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right.
So we got there on the day of the eclipse, I think.
Mm-hmm. The day of the 2017, was it August eclipse?
Yeah.
The big one.
The big one. The big O eclipse that we could see in North America.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty wild. What a fitting day to go to the Yayo Kusama exhibit.
Especially an exhibit so centric on circles and light. It's the universe coming together.
Yeah.
Truly.
Truly, truly, truly. Part of Yayo's belief or like philosophy behind polka dots or like circles in general is that they're supposed to represent infinity. So that's why you see a lot of her artwork tends to have lots of polka dots and like things of that nature.
Circles in general.
Yeah. So like circles can represent a lot of things like the circle of life.
Mm-hmm. We read that the circle could also represent the sun. Do you remember that a while ago?
Yeah, I do remember that. Yeah, so again, the sun coming through.
That's fitting with her Japanese heritage, which traditionally used like circles to represent the sun. And of course, like, was it the flag before the like imperial movement that was like literally a rising sun?
Yeah.
So there you go.
Anyway. So we get there on the day of the eclipse. I think that actually helped us a lot insofar as like the line was a little shorter to get into the museum because people were really, I don't know, into like seeing the eclipse go down.
Yeah, people were very into it.
I mean, I didn't really get to see. I think we were inside when it happened.
Yeah, the full eclipse.
The full eclipse, correct.
But I, little me, happened to be in a Starbucks bathroom as the eclipse was happening. Or not in a Starbucks bathroom, but in a Starbucks waiting for the bathroom. And this, like, mom-ish kind of person just lets me borrow her glasses. And I was like, oh, cool, like, I'll see, like, part of the eclipse. And I was like, oh, it should be, like, you know, pretty neat. And I put them on, and I was audibly like, oh, my God, it's beautiful.
Yeah, that little orange sliver of light.
It was just a little circle of light that was just a little bit, like, impaired. Like, it was not something you couldn't imagine, but it was really profound.
Yeah, it was so, great. Like, not totally unfathomable.
Yeah, you could picture it.
Okay.
You get the idea, but it was nice to see. True. I appreciate nature
doing
its thing.
Yes. So while Kat and I were in Seattle, we actually did a few recordings of just, you know, waiting in line and actually getting to the exhibit. And we'll play some of them for you right now.
Hi, this is Tindin.
And this is Kat.
And we are recording from outside of the Seattle Art Museum. We are currently in line to see the Yayao Kusama, I don't know if I'm actually saying it right, but anyway, Infinity Mirrors exhibit.
Yeah, we've been planning this for a bit, and it's come to fruition.
Yes, so many of the stars, actually, today is also the day of the eclipse. Happy Eclipse Day.
Yeah, we originally did not have that in mind, but I think it might be in our favor. The line is usually around the block, and now it's, around the corner?
Yeah. It's literally around the corner.
Not bad.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Not bad.
Yeah. Enjoy the sounds of Seattle. It's nice. It's like Vancouver, but there's like cooler people. There's like cooler looking people. Like everyone's dressed nice.
It's like Vancouver, but a little edgier.
Yeah. Oh, it's like we were talking about this. Like it just looks a bit older.
Yeah, it does. A bit more like historic.
Yeah. I know nothing about American history, but Catlin, do you know anything in your American history knowledge about Seattle or anything about the Pacific Northwest of America?
No.
But you're from California.
That's a joke. I know that Seattle is a port city, and that's why it's like, I was thinking when we were driving here, like, why is Seattle so known for coffee? And then I was like, oh, of course, because it's a port city, and that's where it comes in first from the original places. So from the beginning, they had, like, the good stuff and things like that. They also are really passionate about chocolate and things like that. And again, it just kind of plays into it being a port city. And by port city, I mean it has a port. It's by the ocean, for those who didn't know.
Singular port city.
I don't think I know anymore.
No more fun facts?
They'll probably pop up as things go on. Yeah. Waiting. What time is it right now?
The time right now is 9:03.
It's 9:03. The exhibit opens at 10.
Yeah, we're an hour ahead of opening time. And the line is, like, we're in a pretty good spot in line because we got here at 8:30, actually, but it's, like, pretty much at the end of the block now, the last person in line.
Yeah, we've been waiting here for about half an hour with our good pal Vikram.
Hi.
And from the three of us, we've kind of been able to get coffee, get breakfast. It's the best way to do it, truly. And we've just been hanging out. It's been good.
Yeah. We'll see you on the inside. Team. Bye.
Bye.
Go for it.
So while Tintin and Vic and I were in line waiting for the Kusama exhibit to eventually let us in, we decided to speak to some people that were also in line. The first person we picked was a very sweet old man who was about third in line, I believe.
Yeah.
And he got there very early. And he had this to say.
A year ago, and we're in on the art islands in Japan. It's called Naoshimi, and they have several of the art museums. It's typically dedicated just to art museums on this island. And her original pumpkin was there, and some of her, at least a little bit of her artwork was there. And then later on, we saw a little bit more of it in Tokyo, so it was our experience from last year's trip to Japan and all. So that's kind of why we're here. But I know she's a lady that's, I think, about late 60s now, and is been doing this all of her life. She does have a significant behavioral health problem, mental problem. I think she's actually in a mental health institution in Tokyo, but still does her work even today. So she's still active. She uses her art as a way to kind of distract some of her mental anxieties and issues to help control her behavior. So it's kind of been a lifelong endeavor for her, but she views these things as a way to kind of calm her, I guess, her inner mind and activities, from what I understand. So that's kind of a part of her motivation.
So how was your experience seeing the first exhibits that you've seen of hers?
The first what?
The first exhibits that you've seen of hers.
On the art islands, they have what they call experiential art, which is partly what this is where you're immersed in it. And a fellow by the name of Terrell and other Japanese artists, and so it's I think it's a whole different feeling to be engaged or involved in an environment. So I find it, you know, connects with you different at a whole different level. So you're actually experiencing it personally in an environment, not just seeing something or maybe hearing something like music. You're sort of enveloped in the experience. So yeah, it's pretty neat.
I'm curious, what time did you get here today?
We were here at 6:45.
6:45 in the morning?
Yes.
Wow. But you're like second in line, so it's pretty much, I think it's worth it.
Again, I'm having a hard time hearing you. What?
Oh, you're second in line, so that's, I think that's pretty
third.
Worth it.
Third. Third. This will be our third.
I mean, you did do 6:45, so.
Yeah. Are you folks in line, or are you in line?
Oh, we're back there. Yeah,
we're way back there. A friend is holding us for our spot. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you. Great. Thanks. And what was your name?
My name's Hugh Albeck.
Well, thank you so much.
Thanks.
Next, we talked to a hip young couple that we thought would have some good insight, and that they did.
Great. So, would you like to introduce yourselves?
Sure. My name is Alexis.
I'm Ryan.
Great. Great. Cool. Are you guys from Seattle?
No, we live in LA. We're here visiting.
Oh, did you guys come all the way, like, specifically for the exhibit, or just, like, it was on the way and you decided to come?
It was on my list of things to do. I saw it. We've been trying to get into the exhibit at the Broad in LA, and it just hasn't happened, so we're hoping we can catch it in Seattle.
Nice. I mean, Day of the Eclipse.
Yeah, we're hoping that the line would be a little shorter since it's the eclipse, but not so much.
What time did you guys get here?
Just after 9, I want to say.
Yeah, just about 9.
We got here just before 9. Yeah. We're over there.
Oh, really?
We're hoping we get an... I heard they sell out pretty much, like, consistently.
Yeah,
I was just trying to listen in on another conversation. It sounds like we have a good shot, but we'll see.
I hope so, too. So what about Yayako-sama's exhibit? Are you... Like, what... Why did you want to see this exhibit, I guess?
I don't know. I had heard a lot of great things about it, and I know that the artist has produced over 70 years of work, so I think it's kind of cool to see a culmination of an art career that's that long. So, yeah, that was the main motivation.
I wanted to go because she wanted to go.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah. Have you ever seen any other sorts of, like, experiential art?
I don't think so. Can you remember any?
I don't think so, no. I can't think of anything like this. No.
Great. Well, it'll be a fun time.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Hope you guys enjoy your stay.
You too.
Cool. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Thank you.
And we'll be back with more Yayoi-sama-related content on CITR 101.9 FM.
Of hearing your band playing on and on and on. Gosh, so loud.
Man, I wish we had a safe place to play music.
Yeah, and shows too.
The Safe Amplification Site Society is a non-profit group dedicated to establishing a legal, affordable, all-ages venue for music and arts in Vancouver. For more information or to get involved, check out www.safeamp.org.
Welcome back to Double Space on CITR 101.9 FM. Today we're talking about Yayoi-sama and her exhibit at the Seattle Art Museum, which Tintin and I, with our friend Vic, we checked it out. And it was great.
Yeah. Nothing short of incredible.
Yeah, I would say incredible.
The first time we stepped into one of the Infinity Rooms, I remember like audibly gasping.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I don't know, like, I don't know why it was so overwhelming to me, but I think part of it was just, like, you can see all the photos online and stuff. You can, like, tell, like, oh, it's just going to be, like, a room where you see, like, lots of lights and it, like, goes on for forever because there's tons of mirrors. Like, that makes sense. And, like, you can really picture it in your head, getting that description, but, like, actually bearing witness to it is quite overwhelming.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. And, like, I think Kusama's work is so... documented on Instagram. It's such an Instagrammable piece. Like, mm-hmm. All the exhibits are really, like, they're well lit, and of course mirrors lend themselves well to selfies.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's very well documented in that respect, but actually being there and experiencing it is kind of overwhelming in a way that you don't expect it to be. But it's still positive, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I thought, I was overwhelmed by, like, how beautiful and how immersive it was.
Yeah, and there's something to be said about how, for one of them that had the lights in it, do you remember that one? that one was really intense because it was really well timed as well. So like there was a point in it when all of the lights turned off and it was just like pure like blackness because it was just like an empty room, or not an empty room, a black room without any other lighting or any other way for light to enter.
It was pretty much sealed off.
Yeah. Yeah, it was weird. I don't know. It gave me like the chills. It was spooky.
And it's kind of interesting because you're surrounded by mirrors, which are things that could reflect light everywhere, and you have all these mirrors around each other, so you could go on forever, but then the lights go off, and that potential is just gone, and you're just in a dark room.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, I don't know, it's beautiful. It looked a lot like city lights at night, but everywhere.
They're very dim and flickering on and on.
Mm-hmm. They were really easy to get hit by, though.
Oh, true. They were very low-hanging.
They dangled a little low.
This is correct.
But, yeah.
Were you a victim of the lights?
I was. I pushed one out of the way because I didn't want to, like, hit it with my head or anything, and they got mad at me. They're like, don't touch the lights. And I was like, what do you want me to do? Like, break this with my forehead?
What do you want from me? And here we have a few more recordings of the exhibit, specifically the one that Kat was referring to with the low-hanging light.
Okay, so we're standing in line once again to see the exhibit. We've stood in two other lines, but they move pretty quickly. We're going to see... Do you remember what it's called?
Yeah, it's called Aftermath of Obliteration of Eternity. It's a very intense name.
I skimmed the description. It's about death, potential afterlife, like very beautiful things. It's a lot of anticipation. I ran to three different banks while we were waiting in line to get American cash. It was not fruitful.
Yeah, Kat is straight up sweating right now.
We had to run, Tintin and I had to run back to coat check to get our IDs after we bought tickets because you need it again when you come into the... It's very convoluted.
America.
America's very convoluted.
Confusing.
But we're here. We made it.
Yeah.
What time is it?
It's 10:25.
It's 10:25 and we are... in it, we're here. The rooms around have different paintings and different sculptures of Yayoi's, and she's been doing work for, what, about 70 years?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, throughout her life, and this is the culmination exhibit.
I'm so excited.
I know. It's beautiful to be in here. We can already see some very, like, vibrant neon paintings with some, like, anthropomorphic dots.
Mm-hmm.
Looks like the beginning of what will become
a good exhibit. The end, or I don't know.
I just meant what will become ominously. Oh. You didn't have to finish my sentence.
Okay.
I appreciate it though.
Yeah. Oh, I like. There's. I guess it's hard to explain, but there's a bunch of sculptures. I guess there's a lot of like weirdly like phallic shapes.
Yeah. If you kind of refer to the image of her piece. We can see it. It's got a bunch of mirrors, and it's got the white phallic shapes with red dots. We see it right there. The door opens, and we get a glimpse. Those are repeated.
Iconic.
Squares on the wall with further of those images.
Wahoo!
Wahoo! Okay, here we are.
So that light is swinging, just make sure not to reach up and grab it. Thank you.
Here we are. Oh my god.
Oh my god.
Oh, please do not touch it with your
sorry.
Hand.
Sorry. Wow. Oh my god. It's amazing. There are lights hanging, and we're surrounded by circular mirrors, and...
I know it's called the Infinity Mirrors exhibit, but it's actually unbelievable.
Oh my god.
Shout out to Apple.
Oh my god, it's complete darkness. Oh my god, and they're flickering. They're so dim. Oh my god, it's beautiful.
That's really cool.
It's like a cityscape, but infinite. Look at the ceiling, too. Oh my god. And we're out.
Guys, thank you so
thank
much.
You so
thank
much.
You.
I also really liked the exhibits where you could... the installation where you could look... in. You weren't actually like physically inside the space, but like you just peered inside and it was like a kaleidoscope kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Those were really neat. There was one that had a lot of these like really bright, not neon, but like just really
like LED lights.
LED lights that like reminded me of like, I don't know, like carnivals or like things like that. That one is one of my favorites as well.
Yeah, I was kind of using like the mirrors to like reflect things. So like it was the reflection of the LEDs and they were all like timed and there were little patterns and things.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty nice.
Yeah.
I really liked the circle room.
Oh yeah.
There was this like big pink tent with black polka dots. And you walk in, and there's, of course, the mirrors everywhere. And within it, there are huge blow-up pink circles with black dots.
Mm. Another really neat one was called the Obliteration Room, which is basically, it's just like a room where all of the furniture and everything is just plainly white, but there's a bunch of, like, polka dots that are of different colors that... observers just put the polka dot stickers like all around the room, and it just made for a very interactive, immersive, playful experience.
Yeah, it's like this room full of like a table and like a bookshelf and like a little couch and all these different like normal furniture pieces, but there was just this like huge, it felt almost like pixely.
Mm-hmm.
Just like horizon.
Yeah. Again, to go back to what Kat said about like how a lot of Yayo's exhibit or installations were really Instagrammable. Obviously, at the time when these ideas were conceived, Instagram didn't really exist and there wasn't like a medium to share photos of you at an exhibit or anything like that. But it's just interesting to see how like pervasive and relevant her art is, even though like the technology has totally changed.
Yeah. And I think that to me, I think exhibition art is really important in these times. Because, I mean, everyone's on their phones, and I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. I'm not one of those people. But I think that exhibition art provides a bit of a solution to maybe some problems of, you know, wanting to experience.
Kat, could you explain what exhibition art is for me?
Yes, of course. I would love nothing more. Exhibition art, I mean, an art piece can be exhibited, so that's kind of a separate thing, but exhibition art is art centered around the exhibit itself, I guess. Like, it's a little complex to explain, as most conceptual art concepts are, but it's all about bringing you into a space that is specifically designed to make you have an experience.
Mm.
So that's kind of the best way I can describe it, is like the artwork itself is the environment that has been created to give you a certain experience, to give you any experience too. It doesn't matter if yours is like a predictable experience or one that's totally off the wall. The experience in general is the art.
Yes. Okay, well, Yayo is definitely, her art is definitely very exhibitionist then in that case.
Mm-hmm. And just really experiential.
Mm-hmm. We were talking earlier about other kinds of conceptual art, and Kat happens to know a lot about conceptual art.
I do.
She, not to brag, but Kat is the expert. But yeah, Yayo is obviously a very conceptual artist. She definitely pushes the boundaries of art, and especially like given the time that she was really the most active, like her stunts in New York City. Would you like to explain, Kat?
Yes. So before conceptual art was really a full-fledged thing, or really just on the cusp of when it was about to happen, there was happenings, which were started by Alan Capro, who was around in about the 1950s, and his pieces centered around audience involvement and a lot of improvisation space in the piece to allow anything that would happen to happen. One thing that he did was tell participants to lick jam off of a car. Yum. That was a happening. Yum indeed.
Delicious.
Another was bringing people into a room that had a lot of ice cubes, and then they touched the ice cubes, and then they melted, and that was the piece.
That sounds weirdly, like, nihilistic.
Yeah.
Because it's like, oh, there's really, I mean, maybe the purpose of it is to just have the experience.
I mean, I think the jam one is a little far-fetched for me, I will admit. But the ice cube one resonates with me a bit because touching an ice cube is definitely an experience. It's really cold. Yeah. People who were in the exhibit, who were really the audience, probably felt cold and a little shock from the coldness. Mm-hmm. And that's something.
Yeah. I guess it's always hard to understand what the specific outcome, or like what the desired outcome from exhibit like that could be, because everyone has such a different like interpretation of the circumstance and like just even the environment in which the individual's in.
I mean, that's the point. The audience is a really, really key part of happenings in conceptual art, some conceptual art, because the art is completely shaped by the audience. Like, it is what it is.
It's true.
It's kind of like if a tree falls in the woods and no one's around to hear it, does it make a sound? You know, is art really art if no one's there to experience it? Yeah.
This is a good question.
Yeah. Age-old question.
True. But yeah, Yayo was part of the Happenings movement.
Mm-hmm.
In the late 60s.
She staged a nude Happenings during the late 60s in New York City. I don't know much about that specific happening, but she was involved in the general happening scene, is the point.
Nice.
And the happening scene, of course, eventually led to conceptual art in general, which is an art genre that is specifically centered on the concept of a piece as opposed to the actual piece that may be produced. So it's like the idea of what you want to produce is really worth more than the actual piece, which is kind of hard to explain.
But that's fair.
One of them is, it's kind of part of the happening scene, but John Cage did, I believe it's called 401, which was a composition that he made, a musical composition, and it's called Silence, and there's no notes on the page, and he sits by the piano, and that's his piece. For 4 minutes, he sits by the piano and doesn't actually touch any keys.
Okay, that's fair. Interesting. I wonder what he intended from that particular performance. But it reminds me, yeah, like of performance art and stuff too. That's, I guess, is performance art just like a branch off of conceptual art? Or are they like separate things in their entirety?
I mean, they're separate but so interrelated. Mm. I feel like so many art mediums have the chance to really commingle.
Ooh.
Yeah. Like, you could have painting and conceptual art, like Saul LeWitt, who used colored pencils. He basically made a bunch of instructions to basically draw cubes, huge cubes, on a wall, basically, in colored pencil. And it looks really cool, but his piece isn't the wall illustration, it's the instructions themselves.
Oh, I see. Okay, cool. See, like, yeah. I'm learning this episode, too. yeah, that's so neat. I mean, like, I guess when I think of conceptual or, like, performance art, I think of, like, Marina Abramović and, like, well, we were talking earlier about, like, Yoko Ono as well.
Mm-hmm.
Just, like, staring at strangers in the MoMA for, like, 7 hours a day or however long she did it per day, Marina Abramović, that is.
Some of it could kind of be, like, it's definitely fair to call some performance art pieces, like, hacks.
Oh.
I think that's a fair term, because there's so much out there, and you can just do anything. And really, if you wanted to, it could be, like, a money grab if you are Marina Abramović.
Oh.
And I'm just saying, if you have the notoriety, and you're like, I'm going to just stand in the MoMA.
That's fair.
And that's going to be what I do. It's a little bit, you know. Not to throw any shade, but, you know, I'm just saying. But even in very seemingly non-consequential performance art, there can be a lot of things that can be unpacked from the experience. Like, what does it mean that this woman goes into this space and looks at people as they are trying to look at everything else, you know? Because a museum is a place where you want to look at things and take them in, and you really, like, take from the art what you want. And by staring at audience or staring at museum goers, she's almost like bringing autonomy back to art.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. That's a good point. To like have the art that you're witnessing to be like a living, breathing, like thinking thing, I think it definitely changes the experience as the consumer of the art, because like as much as you're taking away from the art, when the art isn't necessarily like an object because they're another human being, you kind of give part of yourself to the art as well, I would say. Like, that's what I read from that exhibit in specific.
Yeah, it's definitely a lot about, like, objectification as well. Yeah. You know, like, is Marina Abramović an art object that is to be experienced, or is she a person, despite the fact that she's a known performance artist, she's putting on a performance art, she's providing the art that is to be, like, talked about and contemplated. Is she an object? Is she objectifying herself?
Good question.
A lot of questions. So things that seem really innocuous like that in performance art can be described about and thought about, and that's really where the meat of their worth is.
Mm-hmm. Meaty. And we will be right back after a song on CITR 101.9 FM.
I'm confident that I know nothing, talking to the hedge next door. Every single body hiding something, doesn't matter anymore. Brain stealers, look at what you've done. You're building in construction, reaching for a higher place. Now the work is done, you still feel nothing, 20 floors of empty space. Brain stealers, look at what you've done. Brain stealers, what have I been? Tell myself while I was sleeping, someone took it all away. Even though I know the truth is stranger, I don't have the words to say. Brain stealers, look at what you've done. Brain stealers, what have I?
The AIDS Vancouver Helpline is here to help. Open from 9 to 4, Monday to Friday, the Helpline answers questions about HIV and safer sex. Call to find medical support in your area without giving your name. Run by volunteers, the Helpline is one of the many programs from AIDS Vancouver combating the HIV epidemic in the Lower Mainland. While not medical professionals, our volunteers answer your questions confidentially and anonymously. The Helpline number is 604-696-4666 or contact us at aidsvancouver.org.
What is CITR's reputation, being that it's been around for so long?
Well, I mean, it's, you know, it's very active in the community because it's run by community members and UBC students, obviously. Whether you're into radio as a hobby or whether you want to get some real-world experience, it's a great place to go. It's like a very open and creative environment. Everybody that's, you know, working here seems really jazzed about what they're doing at the station. Just lots of really like good, like challenging music and spoken word content. It's a great station.
CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Vancouver, British Columbia, on unceded Coast Salish, Musqueam territory. Learn how to get involved at citr.ca.
Hey there, welcome back to Double Space on CITR 101.9 FM. And before we get too into our Seattle experience, we would like to make a quick amendment to a previous episode and some previous opinions held in that episode.
this is gonna be a hard one to admit that I was wrong, but while we were in Seattle, we had the privilege of purchasing a metal-plated fidget spinner.
Yeah, it was very weighty. It felt like a very good fidget spinner.
Yeah, it felt very, like, substantial.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a meaty fidget spinner.
Yeah, meaty.
Yeah.
There's that word again.
Okay.
I love it.
And her name is Fidget Jones.
Fidget Jones, yeah.
Yeah.
And we have joint custody
yeah,
of Fidget.
Of course. it just makes me sad because I had so much contempt for fidget spinners in the past when David was talking about fidget spinners in a previous episode when we talked about teen culture. I was sort of horrified at the fact that like fidget spinners were such a hot youth thing.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get it.
Yeah, it's pretty like bewildering when you aren't involved in the culture
yeah,
of fidget spinning, really. But the reason that we have joint custody is we split the cost because neither of us wanted to fully own a fidget spinner, and we both kind of wanted in on the fidget spinning, so made a compromise.
Yeah.
She's ours.
Joint custody is a good fidget spinning
solution.
Yeah. Anyway, we just wanted to update and give our condolences to anyone with fidget spinners that we like maybe made fun of or
yeah,
because I take it back fully.
Anyone we took down,
so fun.
They're really fun.
So fun.
Yeah.
Anyway, as we continue on our Seattle journey, another thing worth noting, I would say, was the wonderful Airbnb in which we stayed at.
It was really, really fantastic.
10 out of 10. We never got to meet the owner of the Airbnb.
Mm-hmm.
Her name is Denise.
Denise, if you're listening to this, we
probably
love
not.
You. But maybe.
But maybe. She was wonderful. And I guess, like, I've never really had an Airbnb experience in which, like, I've been as touched just because I was shocked as to how seamless the how the transition of
yeah,
the keys, everything was. Good
it
job
was really
Denise.
Easy. It's we need to paint the picture though of okay, where we stayed.
Okay,
so we walk in and you know we kind of go in the back because it's a little like guest studio thing, and we pass a hot tub that is ours for the taking, and we're like, oh cool, and we kind of dip our hand in. It's hot already. It's warm. And so
I think most hot tubs are like that, though.
No, but it was, like, ready to go.
Okay,
you know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't, like, a, like, cold hot tub, and it was like, oh, start it up. It's like, it was ready to go. So then we went into the suite, and there was a sauna.
Yeah, what's
in
that?
A huge living room. We didn't get to use it. We didn't have enough time, but I freaking wish. And there was a DVD player in the sauna. I don't know how.
How the DVD player doesn't melt in
I
the
know,
heat.
I know, yeah, and like all the moisture, but it was there.
And that's dope.
For us, that's sick.
And the place was decked out with a bunch of like interesting memorabilia. There was like tons of Bumbershoot like posters.
From like 95.
Yeah, so Denise was obviously like a real one. Like
yeah,
she was down with it.
She also had a lot of like John Lennon paraphernalia. hanging on the walls, and there was like a Richard Avedon poster, like print that was signed. So
Denise has connections.
Yeah,
she's
that's
got
obvious.
The hookup.
That's obvious.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the bed was lovely.
It was a little too soft for my taste.
Yeah.
I don't blame Denise, you know? Like, she doesn't know me.
She doesn't know. People are different.
Exactly.
Yeah. But we also had, like, a washing machine. But, yeah, it was really smooth. The keys were right there. We got the Wi-Fi. It was a breeze.
I just really wanted to make note of how incredible that experience was.
Yeah. Her Wi-Fi name was Badass.
And she is.
She
a
is.
Badass.
She's the ultimate badass. That's for sure.
True.
Most Airbnb rentals go perfectly. Then there are these horror stories. That time a guest totally ransacked an apartment. I feel like that happens more often
than you'd think.
Than, like, just that time. Hannibal Buress had one of his art pieces stolen from his Chicago home. And he talks about it a fair amount, but apparently it was like fine art that's
Wait,
like expensive.
If you're a celebrity, I just feel like that's like, why would you Airbnb your I mean, like, yes, you would probably turn like a sweet profit, but I just feel like that's so danger.
It is danger, but also like if he's traveling around and he has this property, and you can make it worth, like, as much as you want.
Right.
You know? So, probably pretty smart. It's just sitting around.
I guess. And I guess if it's, like, an average Airbnb guest isn't going to take advantage of your hospitality.
Yeah. More often than not, they're pretty good. Mm. But then there are horror stories.
And we will get to that.
Yeah. Let's see. That time where there were meth pipes and someone reenacted a scene from The Shining. I'm just grabbing like headlines of this like listicle that Huffington Post made. So like literally maybe the most unreliable source, but I kind of trust that it happened because like Airbnb is sus and there's like so many people.
I feel like it's not out of the realm of possibility to just have your place totally ransacked.
Yeah, it's totally not. They have things in place to cover it, but, like, people still do that. The next one is that time someone used Airbnb as a temporary brothel. I hate the term brothel. I feel like that's kind of negative. And it's, like, if somebody wants to do that, then, like, I don't know. If there's consent around, I don't know.
If there's consent around, like, the sex work or having your old house being used as a place to facilitate that kind of activity.
When you say it like that.
No, I'm just saying like
no. I like it becomes a little more clear
why that might be.
It seemed a little like sex work shamey at first.
Mm.
But now that I'm like imagining like maybe even multiple people in like a home that I own just doing, but then also like they probably just hung out too. Like average guests would do that, right?
Yeah. I'm sure. I mean, I think it's just all about that consent. You just got to know what's going on in your Airbnb.
Yeah, that'd be like a lot. That'd be a lot to find out. I feel like
very overwhelming news.
I feel like if anyone was like conducting business in your Airbnb, that'd be like a lot to handle. Like, what if they're like getting some sort of big shipment of like, what if they're like, okay, like I like need like this shipment of like fine like oak wood or something, and they just have like they just like fill the house with like wood, you
That's
know
also weird.
And then, you know, like any sort of business would be weird.
Yeah. So first of all, we shouldn't conduct business in Airbnbs, and we shouldn't be recreating scenes from films.
The
in
Shining.
Airbnbs. Yeah,
specifically Stanley Kubrick movies, i.e. The Shining.
Yeah.
I'm going to, you know, take a stab in the dark and say also A Clockwork Orange. Probably shouldn't recreate that
probably
in an Airbnb.
Shouldn't.
It probably goes on for a while. Really, I'm going down this listicle, and it's just a lot of people throwing up parties. Someone decided to host a, quote, XXX Freak Fest in all caps and advertised it on Twitter. I mean, like, I don't know. It's all kind of that stuff. And then one says somebody just took a dump.
Stop.
like that shit's gonna happen. I mean, that sort of thing is going to happen.
Unintended. Oh, I was going to talk about more of the serious side of Airbnb, mm-hmm. which is the impacts that it has on the local housing market.
Mm.
Because a lot of people in Vancouver tend to, or not a lot, but I've heard this argument before, that Airbnb is one of the reasons why it's a contributor to the housing crisis in Vancouver.
Really?
Well, I've heard this as like an alleged reason, because like there's no one reason why, you know, housing tends to cost an exceedingly amount than what it should normally cost, but one of the reasons might be that it's because owners tend to profit more off of renting for short term through Airbnb than like perhaps, I don't know,
leasing
or whatever. Yeah.
I mean, it's definitely a very important tool in gentrification.
True.
Because you have these spaces that, I don't know, like everyday people could just like live in. But then the people that own the place are like, well, capitalism.
Yeah, and the whole point of Airbnb is like, you want to have like a locals look into the city. Don't stay at a hotel or whatever. Stay in this stranger's home.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, hey.
I've used it probably 3 times and I love it. Like, I've had such great experiences and it's just, the houses have been lovely and it's just been like a great place to stay. They've all been pretty central, but there's still definitely contentious aspects.
Yeah, and I guess I'm not trying to write off Airbnb as like a bad thing or anything like that. I just feel like, I guess it's like worth mentioning that like there might be some issues with it, but
I feel like for me, it's like the really expensive Airbnbs are ridiculous. I think that's where the problem is. Of course, I don't know. The problem is with all of it in general, but like I feel like there's some really, really expensive Airbnbs. Actually, now that I think about it, it's probably the cheaper ones that are worse.
Yeah, I would say because it takes up like what could be probably affordable housing in certain situations.
Yeah. Oh, man.
What are we going to do?
So I guess we just buy the $1,000 a night suite.
Yeah.
That's all you can do.
I guess we're going to only be able to go on trips when we can finally pool our money together and stay at the $300 a night Airbnbs.
Yeah, that's it. So
cool.
Boycott Airbnb except for over $300 a night.
I didn't know that was going to be our takeaway message, but I guess it is.
Or just boycott Airbnb. Live in a tent.
Sleep in your car.
Reclaim spaces that should be yours.
Word up.
Yeah.
And this has been Double Space. I am Tintin.
I'm Kat.
And we'll see you next time.
Yeah. Bye.
Bye.